This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
He will straddle the line, play far side of the hash for Wheeler. Wheeler back toward the line here for Laine. Moves in, shoots and scores! Patrick Laine moved in and beat James Reimer short side. It's a power play goal. And Winnipeg has taken a 2-1 lead. Now to the near side for Wheeler at the hash. Cross ice pass for Laine. Shot. He scores! Patrick Laine with his second of the game. Winnipeg regains the lead. It's 3-2 on a power play goal. Bufflin down to the near side for Wheeler. Long lead pass. He scores! Laine will get the hat trick. Pats will rain down here at Hartwall Arena. Congratulations, Patrick Laine. What a thrill for you, my friend. Wheeler back for Laine. Off a skate and stays inside the zone. Laine along the boards. Laine moving in. Let a shot go. He scores! Patrick Laine with his fourth of the series. It's a power play goal. And Winnipeg leads it 2-1.
Three on Thursday, one on Friday. It was a successful homecoming for Winnipeg Jets forward Patrick Laine. Four goals in two games against the Florida Panthers. The Jets and the Panthers split the two-game NHL Global Series in Helsinki, both teams winning by a 4-2 margin. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. And gentlemen, the Finland trip has come and gone. The Jets on their way back to Winnipeg, splitting the series with the Florida Panthers. 4-2 on Thursday, they were victorious. 4-2 on Friday, they were not. If we focus on last night's game, or yesterday afternoon's game, rather, it really does come down to the special teams for the Jets. The Panthers with their three power play goals, the Jets unable to kill off some untimely penalties, especially some from Brendan Lemieux, and that ends up being the TSN turning point as the Panthers get the late goal by Keith Yandle towards the end of the second period, and that stands up as the game winner against the Jets.
You know, Drew, you just mentioned the special teams. It's pretty remarkable when you consider that 12 goals were scored, mm-hmm. right, and one of them was an empty netter.
Yes.
So if you take the empty netter out,
yeah,
11 goals were scored, and 7 of those 11 goals were on the power play.
Yeah.
And it was a huge factor yesterday. And, you know, we have to get into it, you know, right off the top of the show. I mean, Brendan Lemieux takes that penalty for a check to the head, the 5-minute major. And then obviously, you know, Mackenzie Weegar comes in and they fight there. But that was a huge turning point in the game. And I know we're going to talk about it later when we talk about the Jets' discipline and all the penalties and all of that. But I mean, this was a tie game mm-hmm. for the majority of the second period. It was a one-goal game, and this was a game that the Jets could have easily had. And, you know, they were up 9-2 on shots in the first period. I thought their first period on Friday was much better than their first period on Thursday. Let's be honest, guys. Connor Hellebuck kept the Jets in it mm-hmm. like he has so many times. But the Panthers had a great start to that first game. And then, obviously, you know, the Jets and the power play took over. The Jets were clearly the better team on Thursday, and I thought for the majority of yesterday's game, they were the better team. I mean, you look at the possession numbers in that third period. I mean, the Jets were making a good push there. And sure, score effects come in and all of that. But, I mean, that was the determining factor in the game, was that power play and those three power play goals, right? And, you know, Connor Hellebuck even talked about it after the game, Dave. I mean, all of those shots were tipped. And the Florida Panthers aren't known for having a great power play. In fact, their special teams are both bottom 10 in the league. You know, when you give a team five power plays, and especially a five-minute major,
It was a three-minute power play yeah.
because there was the instigator penalty there, right?
But it was a turning point.
But the point is, it was still a three-minute power play. So that was the turning point in the game. But overall, I mean, you split the games, and I don't think that you're unhappy with the way this global series has gone. Let's face it, this was an unmitigated success for the Jets and the Panthers and the NHL. You know, you had Teemu Selänne.
In terms of their brand, you're saying.
Absolutely. You heard the fans at Hartwall Arena, like, kudos to the organizers and the fans and everybody in Finland, because I mean, it was such a fun event, and you had a lot of people from Winnipeg and elsewhere across the world making the trip. So obviously, you know, the Jets wanted the 4 points. They got the win, but overall, this was just a fun couple of days.
Dave, your thoughts on the two games in Finland? Does this, you know, now that Patrick Laine gets four goals on home ice. Is he, you know, obviously he's feeling better about himself, but is he able to translate that back to success back here in North America?
Well, I think, you know, you're removing the goals that he scored. I thought just his skating in general was really good. I thought, you know, we saw it in his stick handling. It's a function of confidence, and maybe that is, you know, a result of goal, you know, the goals that he scored, because he needs a goal scorer, and you know that to really get feeling like you're being a contributor to the team in the game, you have to score goals. So perhaps that they kind of go hand in hand. But I mean, honestly, I just watched him throughout the two games in Finland. He was just skating better, and he was just doing a lot more things. And perhaps again, that's a function of the line he was on often with Brandon Tanev and Adam Lowry, and those guys are hard workers, and you know, they're not obviously the same level of goal scorer that he is, but you know, the fact is perhaps that was infectious, or he just realized, hey, I gotta get my butt in gear. Perhaps it was the extra motivation of being in front of his, you know, home fans, and knowing that he wanted to put on a performance with the expectation. But the reality is he rose to the occasion, and it sure it can continue. I mean, it he's feeling good about his game right now. His shot is, you know, seems to be...
Yeah, shot is still a shot.
His shot is still a shot. So, I mean, again, if Patrick Laine is skating the way he was in those couple of games and you know, going for, being aggressive for pucks and not allowing his pocket to be picked easily, I mean, those are important factors. I mean, we saw it in the game against Toronto where he was losing the puck rather easily. Now, that, again, we're not talking about one game that was a month ago and one game, you know, that was yesterday. We're talking about games within the proximity of a week. So I'm not suggesting that his game is suddenly, you know, back to 100%, but I just think he's on his way to feeling good about himself, and that translates to success for the Jets.
Well, you know, as we were talking about it on Wednesday's show, because we hadn't seen him really with Tanev and with Lowry, you know, for a consistent period or anything at that point in time. Of course, he played in Toronto and he was on the fourth line a little bit. But we talked about on Wednesday saying, you know, will the simplification of his line mates game, because Tanev and Lowry play pretty simple games, straight line games, you know, go get the puck, skate hard, hit somebody, retrieve the puck. Would that help, you know, Patrick Laine, and that it'll make his game simpler as a result? Because this was a guy, when he was playing, you know, with Nikolai Ehlers and Brian Little, and when he was sort of moving around the lineup, he was a little bit lost, and maybe he was trying to do too much without a lot of confidence. And so after watching him play with Tanev and Lowry for those two games, do you think that he's maybe, to Dave's point, skating better and he's a little bit looser just because the game and his line mates are a simpler game to play?
I think there's no doubt that he was skating better, and I think the confidence is back in his game, and that's what's the most important, right? What better way to regain your confidence than scoring three goals in your native country, right? And overall, I thought that line was really solid, even yesterday. And Patrick Laine obviously didn't get as much power play time, didn't get as many goals, but he still got the one goal. Mm-hmm. By the way, can we just talk about that shot?
It's incredible. Yeah.
Even if you, like, you know, the crazy thing is, even in slow motion, it looks fast.
Like, I realize that we're lucky here in Winnipeg that we get to watch all of Laine's goals, but that shot, top corner, shout out to Roberto Luongo, by the way, coming back from injury and playing a fantastic game.
Well, he's the key, obviously, to the Panthers' success.
And we talked about it on Wednesday, Drew. We thought it was going to be Michael Hutchinson in the second game, right? Because Roberto Luongo was just skating with the team at that point, coming off of injury.
Obviously, the Panthers are desperate. I mean, you look at their record so far this season, and after they lost Thursday against the Jets, you know, come back Friday. You don't want to come home having lost both games, because the season quickly does begin to slip away if you've only won two or three games in your first 12. So the Panthers were desperate for a win. Roberto Luongo is clearly far and away their best goaltender, and as a result, he was healthy, so put him in the lineup.
Right, and back to Laine. I mean, he's been a little bit snake-bitten early on this season, and when you talk about Patrick Laine, you can't not talk about all of the lines he's played on. And we talked about that on Wednesday's show as well. I mean, he's played on the second line, the first line, the third line, and the fourth line. You know, as an aside, I was very surprised that it was Jack Roslovic that came out of the lineup yesterday.
So am I. I expect he'll be back in the lineup, and we'll talk about, you know, the forwards, and we'll talk about Brendan Lemieux's future with this team later on in the show.
And again, you know, I'm glad that Nick Petan got into his first game of the year. I think I speak for everyone when we thought it was going to be Brendan Lemieux coming out of the lineup.
I was surprised to see that it was Jack Roslovic, without a doubt. I wasn't certain what Brendan Lemieux had done to earn that spot for last night's game over Jack Roslovic. I was surprised it was Connor Hellebuck in net again, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, the only indication to me that it was going to be Connor Hellebuck was he was speaking, he did like a little snippet for the NHL Twitter or whatever, Instagram, and he basically said something like, I'm really excited for tomorrow. meaning, you know, either he's being a really good teammate or he's really excited to get back in that. So I kind of had an inkling that he was going to be him. But, he, you know, he faced a lot of shots on Thursday.
Yeah,
so
he was peppered in the first period.
So my presumption was that, you know, you'll go with Brassois. And to me, that probably would have made more sense. But I agree with you guys. You know, I don't know, and I'd be curious to know what the coach didn't see in Jack Rozovic's game that he perhaps felt the need to pull him for that game. Because that, to me, is the it's obviously nothing that Brendan Lemieux was doing, because Brendan Lemieux really hadn't done much in the games that he had been playing.
So you think it was more about things that Jack Rozovic wasn't doing than things that Brendan
Lemieux... Rozovic played 4 minutes on Thursday.
Yeah, no, again...
He's played 4 minutes most of the games this year. You haven't been able to see enough of him.
Yeah, no, of course. I'm not suggesting that I noticed anything that was specific. And again, right, like as he just said, there wasn't a lot of time for him to be able to do something significant. But what I'm getting at is, what was the coach's motivation to pull Jack Rozovic? Because, I mean, with Jack Rozovic, you know what you're getting. And so to me, you know, removing that element from the game doesn't really make a lot of sense, especially when you think, how good would that fourth line be? And we'll probably see it on Friday against the Colorado Avalanche. Of Kopp, Rozovic, and Patan.
Oh, it's a skill line. I mean,
right. But what I'm getting at is, it really gives you another line to score some goals and contribute to the team, versus, you know, what you don't have when you have Jack Rozovic sitting in the press box. So
it's the same problem we've seen. Sorry, Dave, with Nick Patan almost his entire time with the Winnipeg Jets. He's playing in a role with a couple of what I'm going to call grinders, you know, for lack of a better term, in Andrew Kopp and Brendan Lemieux yesterday, rather than see him play with some skill guys like a Jack Rozovic.
Drew, I think a huge positive as well about these two games is Matty Perreault, a guy who struggled and has been on the fourth line. He scores in the game on Thursday, and then Nikolai Ehlers scores yesterday, a beautiful goal. Another player who I thought was really flying out there. Mm-hmm. I thought Ehlers was maybe the Jets' best forward yesterday.
Well, that goal he scored to open the scoring, I mean, he... Just the move to be able to keep control of yourself as you receive that pass and you come over the blue line in control, and then you take the quick shot and gobble up your own rebound. That's a high skill sort of play from an impressive player right there in Nikolai Ehlers.
And it's funny because I was looking at his stats, and I thought to myself, how does Nikolai Ehlers only have one goal in 13 games and two assists? Because he's such a talented player, and I know obviously we've talked about, you know, how he went through the goal drought, but still, like, it still just doesn't seem real when you actually look at the numbers, and then you actually, you know, you can see what he can contribute, and like you just said, he was flying yesterday.
Well, the goal drought for the Jets, and we'll talk more about this on the other side of the break. The goal drought for the Jets at 5-on-5 is significant right now. This team just can't score 5-on-5 and even strength. The power play is doing incredibly well, which is fortunate for the Jets, because the 5-on-5, it's been a struggle. And when we come back, I want to talk more about that, to see how does this team get going in those 5-on-5 situations. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Much more to come about your Winnipeg Jets. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Now a lead passes. That was broken up. Ehlers a partial break. Ehlers speeds into the back end, though. Shot, stop, rebound. They score! Nikolai Ehlers denied on the first one. Got his own rebound. Off the backhand and the forehand. And Winnipeg, for the second straight game, has opened up the scoring. It's 1-0 for the Jets.
Paul Edmonds with the call, Nikolai Ehlers with the even strength goal to open the scoring yesterday in Helsinki. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy, always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit Linden Market Dental Center. com. Two games over in Finland, the Jets score a grand total of 6 goals in those two games. Two of those goals were even strength. One came into an empty net. 3 were on the power play. Gentlemen, the Winnipeg Jets have one of the more enviable rosters in the NHL in terms of offensive firepower, yet they have scored a grand total of 20 even strength goals this season. That ranks them 26th in the NHL. How is it that the Winnipeg Jets just cannot score 5-on-5?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and that's really, you know, the $64,000 question when it comes to the Jets this year, because if you look at the record, mm-hmm. I mean, they're still, you know, right near the top of the Central Division. Obviously, you know, the Nashville Predators are leading the division, but, you know, the Jets' power play guys is really winning them hockey games. And obviously good goaltending is helping as well. And it's not just Connor Hellebuck. Lauren Brossoit in his three games have really been good, but they're just not generating enough quality. High danger is the word you hear a lot. And we're going to have Sean Tierney on later in the show, and we're going to talk about 5-on-5 shot differential and expected goals. But they're simply not generating enough of those high danger chances. And I think when you're talking about Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, and Blake Wheeler, I mean, that was their best line at 5-on-5. And we talked about it a lot last year. The little Ehlers-Laine line really struggled. I mean, Laine scored 20 of his 44 goals on the power play last year, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's no surprise that all of Laine's goals, except for the empty netter, have been on the power play. I mean, Laine is going to excel on the power play. Half of his goals, or more than half of his goals, are going to be on the power play. So I think it starts with, you know, the top two lines. And, you know, that Connor Scheifele-Wheeler line, I think early on in the season, they were generating enough. And we know that they're able to generate a lot off of the rush and in transition. But the second line really struggled. And that's why you saw Paul Maurice, you know, move Connor off of the first line. And then now, obviously, you know, you've got Connor there on the second line with Perreault. And I actually think that Connor Little Perreault line has generated quite a bit 5-on-5, well, and you saw it in game one of the series.
They had one of the even strength goals. Right. Matthew Perreault's goal was the even strength there. Dave, last year this team, which, I mean, isn't the team that started this season for the Jets isn't terribly dissimilar to the team that started last year for the Jets. Last year the Jets had the fourth most 5-on-5 goals in the entire league. And this year they're towards the bottom of the league, having played even more games than a lot of teams. It is somewhat inexplicable to me that they just can't do anything 5-on-5 right now.
Well, I mean, I think it's a function of a couple of things. I know that we always assume that whatever you did last season is going to translate immediately into this season. And you know, just like going on a good winning streak to end the season isn't going to impact how you start this season. I just don't know that you can really take too much from it because there are changes to personnel. While it does remain largely the same for the Winnipeg Jets, but other teams change, obviously, too, so you have to deal with that. And I think, look, this is a team that, like you said, Drew, they haven't been super successful scoring 5-on-5, but their power play has definitely been effective. And this is a team right now that's fifth overall in the NHL in terms of points. Mm-hmm. And they haven't played that many more games than everybody else. A lot of teams have played 14. The Canucks played 15. Mm-hmm. So, or 13. A lot of teams have played 13.
It's not like everybody's going to catch up with them and pass them all in one fall swoop.
Yeah, I'm saying it's not super inflated to the point where it's like, well, the Jets played four more games than everybody else, and that's the reason why their points are inflated. But, it's something that they're going to work out because this is a team that's too talented and has too much talent. I just think it's a function of they're still working out those kinks of which lines are going to be the most effective. Again, with this much firepower, this much talent, I can't see how you can't get that figured out. But to this point, they haven't really seemed to have that success, obviously, as evidenced by the 20 goals, 4-on-5-on-5. But, you know, to think that you're struggling, in quotes, with that, but fifth overall in the league, it's a good position to be in.
Certainly. It's a good problem to have that you're playing well, you're not playing overly well, but you're getting results in terms of on the scoreboard. I mean, the power play has really been the catalyst, of course. They have the second best power play in the NHL, just trailing the Vancouver Canucks. Last year, the nine bottom teams in goals for at 5-on-5 all missed the playoffs. Is this going to be a season-long problem, or do you think that they are able to rectify this problem and turn it around, Ezzy? The only team, the Colorado Avalanche, had the 22nd most goals for at 5-on-5, and they were the lowest-ranked team to make the playoffs. So really, 5-on-5 performance was a great indicator of playoff, if you're going to be a playoff team last year or not.
Yeah, there's no doubt the Jets have to start scoring more at 5-on-5, and they will. Like you said, the amount of talent that the Jets have on this roster, this can't continue. I think another factor has to be the play of the fourth line, the ice time of the fourth line, I should say, and the fact that they're not getting a lot of ice time. That wasn't the case last year. The Jets were able to roll out four lines.
Mm-hmm.
Quite simply, that isn't the case this year when you have Brendan Lemieux, Jack Roslovic, you know, Nick Petan, whoever's on the fourth line, not playing that much.
It
was Matty Perreault before that. We talked about it. Matty Perreault, even though he goes out there on the second power play unit, Perreault's playing 7, 8, 9 minutes a game, whereas last year, you know, obviously he wasn't on the quote-unquote fourth line last year.
Sure.
But he was playing 11, 12, 13, 14 minutes a game. So I think that's a factor as well, that you're not able to now take some of the pressure off of the second line or the third line. But it goes back to what I was talking about before. And I mean, maybe you would disagree with me, but I don't think that top line has been as dominant at 5-on-5.
No, there's no question about
it. I'm talking about, and Scheifele has been the Jets, I think, Scheifele and Connor have been the two best forwards for the Jets all year long at 5-on-5. But I just don't think that line as a whole has been as dominant.
Well, Blake Wheeler, to your point, is he averaging more than a point a game, but 10 of his 16 points have come on the power play. So you're right. 5-on-5, they haven't been able to dominate. And, I mean, we remember last year when they were playing 5-on-5, especially the Connor Shafley Wheeler line, they would cycle teams to death. They would just they couldn't get the puck off them. They'd go in there. They'd get the puck. They'd either have a clean zone entry and just control it, or they'd go in and force a turnover, and they would just be able to grind teams down. You haven't seen that sort of extended zone time this year from the Jets' top forwards. It's perplexing to me. I'm not sure what it is. I'm not sure if it's a motivation wouldn't be the right word, but a skating issue or other teams are defending against the Jets differently. But right now, I think that is problem number one from my books. That's problem number one that the Jets need to rectify as we're, you know, through the first 14 games of the season.
Right. And I think when you look at that second line that the Jets are putting out there now, we talked about it. Connor's out there with Little and Perreault.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their possession numbers were good yesterday. And that's been a better possession line than Line A has been with Little and Ehlers, or Line A has been with, let's say, Connor and Little. I mean, we've seen a lot of permutations, you know, these first 13 or 14 games here. But when you're talking about the four lines as a whole, it's very evident that they're not producing as well at 5-on-5. I'm saying the four lines this year versus the four lines last year.
Yeah.
And that's before Paul Stastny. I mean, Paul Stastny comes in, yeah. The Jets have the best second line in the entire league.
Right.
That's why they went to the Western Conference Final, able to put out Stastny, Ehlers, and Laine. So I agree with you. It is perplexing. I don't think anybody expected the Jets to have this many problems, but I do think, you know, coming up with a break and you've got Colorado coming up, you know that they're competing with you for the division crown. And they are. I mean, Nashville right now is a couple points ahead of the Jets, but Colorado's right up there.
Colorado's tied with the Jets, 17. They're 7-4-3. The Jets are 8-5-1. Both teams are 3 points behind the Predators. So the Avalanche certainly are a chief rival to the Winnipeg Jets this year in the Central Division race, no question.
Right, and I don't think it's a personnel issue. I mean, the Jets have probably the best group of forwards in the entire league. They're one of the best offensive teams in the league. They have the second best power play in the league. I think it's just a matter of time before that power play is number one.
The power play is, I mean, certainly hasn't been an issue. It's a matter of, you know, I thought you brought up an interesting point, the usage of the fourth line. I mean, that continues to be perplexing to me. I know that, you know, all the games have been heavily influenced by the amount of penalties that have been taken and the amount of power play and penalty kill time, and that can lead to why the Jets haven't been able to get the fourth line out there. But you just can't continue to play Jack Roslovic 4.5 minutes a game. This is a guy who's highly skilled, who's got a ton of talent, who can help your team, especially at 5-on-5 situations.
Well, that's
but he can't
point.
Hit the ice.
It's not just the ice time. It's what the ice time symbolizes, right? Mm-hmm. It's the fact that a fourth line, when it's effective, and we've seen it on the Islanders, by the way, the Cal Clutterbuck, Casey Cizikas, Matt Martin line. I mean, you could say, oh, you know, those guys are just a bunch of grinders. Well, they're getting goals. And that's probably, I would say, the best fourth line in all of hockey right now. And the Islanders are off to a great start. I mean, that's a line that, you know, Barry Trotz can put out there, and they create offense. I mean,
they
cycle the puck. They get the odd goal. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Matt Martin scored the other night. I mean, Matt Martin's not a guy you expect to score 20 goals. But the point is, he's putting them out there, and they're having an impact on the game, and it's taking pressure off of the other lines. And I think that's what the Jets haven't had this year. And, you know, again, I realize Paul Maurice has his reasoning for, you know, the limited ice time that the fourth line is getting right now. But I just think, for whether it's a Jack Roslovic, whether it's a Matty Perreault, who's obviously on the second line now, but Jack Roslovic, Brendan Lemieux, you know, Andrew Kopp, whoever's on the fourth line, it's hard to have an impact on a game when you're only playing 4 or 5 minutes.
If you're Jack Roslovic right now, I mean, I'm not sure that he's better off playing with the Winnipeg Jets 4 minutes a game than he would be, you know, dominating at the AHL level. You just there's no point for him right now being in the role that he's in, and that, I think, is something that needs to change for this Winnipeg Jets team. When we come back, much more Jets talk. Mike McIntyre, our good friend from the Winnipeg Free Press, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose. News and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, he's the dump of Dump and Chase. He's our good friend, Mike McIntyre. Mikey, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure. I'm considering changing my name to Dump Junior, given that you know, gave me a shout-out in Dump and Chase this week. I appreciated that one, Mike.
I just hope your wife wasn't reading your Twitter account when you stated that appearing in Dump and Chase was, I believe you said, the second greatest thing that's happened to you, first being the birth of your child, and the third being your wedding.
You know, she hasn't spoken to me in 3 days, so maybe that has something to do with it. I just sort of assumed it was a standard operating procedure, but I'm not 100% sure. Maybe I'll have to investigate that sort of thing.
Well, I do know a few divorce lawyers from my previous line of work in the crime and justice beat, so let me know if you need any help in that department.
I appreciate that. Do you have a couch I could sleep on if that ends up being the case?
You'll have to share a space with our couple dogs, but sure thing.
That's fine. I'm willing to do that. Mike, obviously, we brought you on to talk about the Jets, and you know, the trip to Finland is now complete. They're on their way back, I believe, any minute now, and you know, having played the two games and having, you know, spent the week there, from your vantage point, was this a worthwhile adventure? You know, they split the game, so there's no blood there whatsoever. But, you know, all in all, you know, was this worthwhile for the Jets and the Jets organization?
I think we'll know a little bit more in a few weeks or maybe even a few months when we can look back and determine whether these two games and the way that the schedule has been structured with, you know, two very large breaks sort of built in here, the break that led up to these two games, and now an even longer break with the Jets not even playing again till next Friday, that's obviously going to mean a much more compressed schedule kind of outside of these couple weeks. And, you know, how the Jets handle that heavier schedule once things get going and whether there's any kind of Helsinki hangover. I mean, we've seen with other teams in the past that have gone overseas that there have been issues with the way they've handled things once, you know, action got back going again. So, you know, I guess the 2 points out of four, I mean, obviously the Jets would have liked the four, and I think they were in a position to take all 4 points. And in a lot of ways, guys, it was more of the same from the Jets, right? We saw all the things that we've seen early in the season from this team, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And on the ugly side, the penchant for taking far too many penalties and just looking a step off at times. So I don't know that we learned anything about these Jets, but I do think that, you know, the bonding that comes with a trip like this and being under a spotlight on an international stage, that certainly can have its perks. And maybe more than anything, if this trip can get Patrick Laine going, then I'd say that it's absolutely worth it, because maybe this was the spark that he's needed to get his season pointed in the right direction. And I think in a lot of ways, as Patrick Laine goes, these Jets go. And so if he's got an extra step, a little giddy up in his step now, then I think that's obviously overall a very good thing for the Jets.
Mike, I'm not sure if you caught any of the last segment, but we were talking about the Jets and how they've struggled all year long at 5-on-5. Most of their goals, obviously, during the Global Series coming with the power play, Laine getting, you know, 4 of those goals. Can you point to one reason why the Jets are struggling so much at 5-on-5 this year?
I really can't. I mean, the personnel should be there, right, to be at times a dominant team 5-on-5. When you look at the Jets and you look at who they've played, let's not forget, guys, in the first 14 games, the Jets have only played a handful of teams that actually made the playoffs last year. That's not to take away the quality of opponent, but they have not played a lot of the other heavyweights. And so, you know, I think the Jets, when you look on paper, you think, well, geez, they should be dominating in large stretches at 5-on-5. And it seems like the only time they really do that is when they're behind in a game, and we've seen that numerous times in the third period when the Jets are chasing a game, and it's as if they flip a switch, which has to be even more frustrating, right? Because you look at that and you say, well, geez, obviously the talent is there, the ability is there. Why is it that it takes sort of dire circumstances for them to get going? And I don't have an answer for it. There seems to be, and maybe I'll bring up the word that became very popular around this team last year, courtesy of Nikolaj Ehlers, there seems to be a bit of a malaise around this team. I don't know if it's just sort of the early season blues, and we've heard a little bit from players that the bench just isn't the same as it was. You know, it's not as vocal. It just seems guys are having a harder time getting into it, and that's a little troubling. Is it because they're a young team and, you know, there's going to be a natural sort of downside after what they went through last spring, that this just doesn't feel quite the same, so they're just not quite into it? Is it because they know they have the talent and they're kind of like that really smart student who knows that they don't have to study all that hard to get pretty good grades in school, so they're just doing the bare necessities? These are all just theories, but obviously they've got to get this figured out sooner or later, because, you know, their record is pretty good. I think you look at it, though, and say it should be better, and you can't just sort of keep getting by the way the Jets have. Once they start hitting some of these heavyweights, they're going to have to really step up their game.
Now, Mike, yesterday we saw the season debut of Nick Petan, and he comes in, and many would have thought he would have come in for Brendan Lemieux, but instead he comes in for Jack Roslovic. So I guess the first part of the question is, are you surprised that Jack Roslovic is the one who gets pulled? Do you think it's something he's not doing as opposed to something Brendan Lemieux is doing well? And second part of that question, of course, is what do you think the Department of Player Safety is going to be saying to Brendan Lemieux in the next couple of days?
Who's going to be harder on Brendan Lemieux, the Department of Player Safety or the Department of Paul Maurice? Because I think regardless of what the NHL does to Lemieux, and I suspect he might get a game or two, I think it's going to be a lot longer than that before he's in the Jets lineup again after what he did yesterday. This is a guy who, you know, we know that he plays very close to that line, and I think he had done a pretty good job so far this season in not stepping over the line. But what we saw in that second period yesterday is what we've seen at times with Brendan Lemieux when he's been with the Manitoba Moose. And obviously to do that with the Moose, you know, to have a meltdown and take very foolish, undisciplined penalties, not quite the same spotlight or consequences as doing it up at the NHL level. And, you know, Brendan Lemieux, he was on thin ice already once he took that careless high-sticking penalty that led to the tying goal on the power play. And then, yeah, I don't know what was going through his mind when he throws that hit on Vincent Trocheck. I mean, it was dirty. It was completely unnecessary. And in a way, it cost the Jets the game. And I suspect that plane ride home from Finland, you know, about 8-hour plane ride for Brendan Lemieux, which the Jets are about halfway through right now, is probably feeling a lot longer for Brendan Lemieux because of what happened. As for your first question, I was surprised that it was Jack Roslovic coming out and not Brendan Lemieux. You know, I don't know if Paul Maurice couldn't help himself and he just wanted a little grit in the lineup. It's not like the Florida Panthers or some kind of, you know, Broad Street Bullies where you figured the going was going to get tough. This wasn't a division rival or anything. And I'm always in favor of more speed and skill over anything else. And so it was a bit of a surprise. And you wonder, guys, like Jack Roslovic, obviously he hasn't produced yet this season, but could anybody really argue that he's been put in much of a position to produce? He's obviously had to take on a lot of responsibility moving to center. And then he's done it in a fourth line role where there's been nights that he's barely playing, you know, 3-4 minutes. It's really hard to show a lot in such limited time. And now he's been, before he got healthy scratch yesterday, he was moved back to the wing as Andrew Copp moved down. So he's kind of been put, I think, in a difficult position. I do suspect, though, that when the Jets take on the Colorado Avalanche next Friday, Jack Roslovic will be back in the lineup. And perhaps in a very intriguing fourth-line role now with Nick Petan and Andrew Copp, I'd be very curious to see what that trio could do. And maybe Jack Roslovic not having the responsibilities that come with being a centerman, maybe that can free him up to do some of the things that we know he can do very well.
Mike McIntyre is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Winnipeg Jets as they return home from their trip overseas to Finland. Mike, you know, the power play certainly has been the catalyst for this team. If it hadn't been for the power play, given their struggles at 5-on-5, the Jets' record would be far worse than what it currently is. Can they continue to keep up this power play, or do you think that they maybe have peaked and it's going to regress to the mean a little bit more?
I keep thinking that, you know, especially with teams, the way they pre-scout and all the video that's available, the Jets shouldn't be doing anything that is catching anybody by surprise on the power play. In a lot of ways, guys, every Jets power play almost looks the same. This is not them improvising or changing things up game to game. You know what they're going to do, and their opponents must know what they're going to do. And yet, at the end of the day, there's very little, it seems, they can do to stop it. And I'll say this, even when the Jets have not been successful on their power plays, which doesn't seem like it happens very often, but even when they don't score, they've still looked dangerous almost every single power play they have. And I guess, you know, when you think about it, it comes down to this simple fact. The Jets have an extra player on the ice, and they seem to be doing a remarkable job of always finding an open guy. And I think it all comes down to the captain, Blake Wheeler, who, you know, some may say that he doesn't quite look the same maybe 5-on-5, and I think you could say that about a lot of players on this team. One thing though about Blake Wheeler, guys, he has not lost 1 ounce of his ability to thread the needle on some of those passes on the power play, and his ability to find open guys, whether it's Patrick Laine or Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele or Dustin Byfuglien on the point, I think Blake Wheeler is a huge part of what makes this power play tick. And the Jets have done a great job of exploiting the extra man when they have it. And so I'd say that, yeah, teams are going to find a way to stop it. And yet the fact it hasn't happened so far, maybe it's just going to be one of those things, kind of like Alex Ovechkin has made a career out of everybody knowing where he is on the ice and what he's going to do, and yet teams can't stop him.
Mike, just to go back to Patrick Laine, who was obviously the big story, scoring the 4 goals in these 2 games. You know, he's playing on that third line with Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev. You know, the Jets have 6 days off now, but then they've got the 4 home games after that. When you look at that second line with Kyle Connor and Brian Little and Matty Perreault, do you think Paul Maurice is going to keep the second and third lines as is now?
I think there's got to be a temptation to give Laine now another look back in the top six, just because it seems to me that in some ways, and yeah, I know he still only has the one non-power play goal, and it was into an empty net the other day. So, but to me, guys, these last 2 games in Finland, he's looked like a completely different player, not just on the power play, but on 5-on-5. I mean, yesterday, the confidence that you saw him play with, I mean, when he was out there with some of those toe drags and the dangles that he was doing, and even on the back check and on the forecheck, he looked like a completely new player. And so if the idea of moving Laine down in the lineup was to try and get him right, you know, maybe just get back to doing some of those basics and putting him with a couple defensive-minded players like Lowry and Tanev, maybe almost through osmosis, that's helped. But I don't think that that's a long-term thing. I don't see Patrick Laine playing on the third line or the fourth line as he was for a brief stint, you know, for much of the season here. So I'm sure the temptation will be to give him another look in that top six role. Does it happen as early as next Friday? I mean, possibly. And I guess the easy thing would be that Matthew Perreault would probably be the guy that goes back down, because he's that guy that you can just plug in anywhere, right? So maybe we see some line shuffling again happen, and I'll be curious to see if Patrick Laine can carry over what we saw in Finland now back here on North American soil, especially if it's back into the more familiar top six role.
Now, Mike, we're not going to just ask you about the Jets. We've got to ask sometimes about Jets prospects. And, of course, the one you and I were focused on last night was Mikael Burden, because he was quite entertaining in net for the Manitoba Moose. maybe explain to the listeners just how entertaining a player he is, both on and off the ice.
Yeah, I mean, I think we saw a glimpse of it from the clip that went viral. I guess it was last year when he was playing in Sioux Falls in the USHL, and Mikkel Burden, the young Russian prospect goalie, scored a goal into an empty net, and then had one of the great all-time celebrations with his team when he did score. And as we've sort of come to know, just through the Jets development camp and our little bit of contact with him, this is a kid who, his English is not the greatest, but my goodness, the personality that he has is big time. And last night was my first time ever seeing him in, you know, up close in person, and not just on video. And my goodness, I've not seen a goalie like him. I mean, everything he does on the ice is must-see. Even the so-called routine saves he makes just look different. He is the most aggressive goalie that I've seen play in person. I mean, he looks like he wants to join the rush. He's out of his net a ton, playing the puck, poke checking. I mean, I think he had two or three big time poke checks last night. You know, in some ways, this probably isn't going to sit well with fans if you use this comparison. Dave, I think you mentioned as well last night, there's a little bit of Andre Pavlik just in terms of his where he gets out of position sometimes, and then the recovery. But I'll use a much more legendary comparison. There's almost like some Dominic Hasek in him in terms of the crazy acrobatic sort of saves he makes. The way he moves side to side in the crease is just incredible. And, you know, it was interesting, Pascal Vincent, Moose coach, last night after the game, he actually said in some ways there's a little bit of Marc-Andre Fleury in Mikkel Burden, just in terms of the personality and how much it's clear this kid enjoys the game. And he's loving life right now with the Moose. He's 3-0 in his three starts. I'll be very curious to see what happens. Eric Comrie is coming back to the Moose now that the Jets trip is over. Does Mikkel Burden just go back to the ECHL where he started this year and where he's won all his starts at that level? Or do they look at Ken Appleby, the more veteran goalie with the Moose, who, by the way, is going to get the start tonight for the Moose, and has struggled with the Moose so far this season? Is he the guy that goes down? I'll be curious to see, but on a personal, selfish level, I'd love to see much more of Mikkel Burden with the Moose this year. And I think any Winnipeggers out there, trust me, folks, if you go watch this kid play, as I tweeted last night, he's worth the price of admission alone.
Mike McIntyre covers the Winnipeg Jets. He covers the Manitoba Moose for the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
You bet, guys. Enjoy the day.
Take care, Mike. Thanks again. When we come back, we discuss the Jets' penalty troubles. They've been taking too many of them. Is it going to come back to haunt them throughout the year? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
It's this hit on Vincent Trocheck with about 6 minutes left in the second period that really changed the game. As you can see him come through, that's an avoidable play. The point of contact, the main point of contact is the head, and it's really noticeable from that angle.
TSN's Dave Poulin talking about Brendan Lemieux's hit to the head last night. A game-changing play. Lemieux, given a match penalty for the hit to the head, he'll be suspended indefinitely until Commissioner Gary Bettman can make an assessment, and the Department of Player Safety, no doubt, will hand down some justice. Another game for the Winnipeg Jets. Another litany of penalties as the Jets currently lead the NHL in penalty in minutes per game played. 14 minutes and 38 seconds the Jets are averaging in terms of penalties per game played. Ezzie, can this keep up? Is this going to be a season-long problem for the Jets, or do you think that they're going to get this under control and begin to reduce the parade to the penalty box that we've seen so far?
I obviously can't answer that, but they need to start taking less penalties. I mean, I just don't think that there's any other way to put it, and it's starting to cost them hockey games, right? Mm-hmm. And the Jets' penalty kill has been very sharp. I think it's ninth right now, if I'm not mistaken, in the NHL. And we saw how good the penalty kill is against the Nashville Predators. I don't know if we've ever seen that in 8 years of the Jets being back, where they've killed off eight consecutive penalties. And not only did they kill off those penalties, but it was against arguably the best team in the league.
Sure.
Right? That has a lot of weapons on the power play. So I don't think it's going to continue, Drew, at this level. But I do think that the Jets are probably going to still be, at the end of the year, a top 10 team in the league in penalties. And I think it's because of the players they have. And obviously, you know, there are some games in there, you know, that have skewed the numbers a little bit.
Sure.
The Nashville game especially, right?
And getting a misconduct, and a match penalty like Lemieux did yesterday certainly jumps up
right.
in terms of the total
right.
penalty in minutes taken.
Right, but I don't think that the Jets are going to all of a sudden, you know, become, you know, one of the teams that takes the least amount of penalties. So, but it's the stick infractions, you know, the Brendan Lemieux high sticking penalty to me, guys, is a penalty that I think the coach hates more. And obviously, you know, the 5-minute major hurts the team more, so Paul Maurice didn't like that one either. But that high sticking penalty, I mean, that's just a careless penalty.
Well, here's what Jets head coach Paul Maurice had to say about the penalties and Brendan Lemieux's penalties in particular after yesterday's game.
Paul, what was your initial reaction to the hit by Lemieux on Trocheck?
Oh, the refs got it right.
Do you feel like it was a turning point in some ways in the game? Or?
Yeah.
Paul, just with the stick fouls, I mean, what are some of the things you can do to minimize them? You often talk about needing to move your feet. Do you think
just keep them on the ice? That'll be a starting point, right? Which one? You know what? Listen, I got no complaint about the referee. I don't like the call on Scheif, but nobody cares. The penalties that Brendan took, Brendan deserved.
Pretty damning statement from Jets head coach Paul Maurice, but also pretty honest. I mean, those were clear penalties. There's no question about it. Sometimes there's questionable calls. Some of those calls in that Nashville game were questionable calls. But yesterday, I mean, Brendan Lemieux, full marks for the penalties that he earned. Because, you know, certainly the hit, the stick, was I think it was on Keith Yandle. Was that who the high sticking penalty was against? I can't recall. But, you know, that he was lucky it wasn't more than two. I mean, We got him up in the mouth with a pretty good two-hander there, Dave.
Well, I think as he hit it on the head, I think the function of this is going to be a team that can take penalties, will take penalties, but the reality is that you just have to avoid those stick infractions. Those are the ones that the coaches hate because it generally means you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, so instead you're using your stick in some way that you shouldn't be. And it's just, you know, whether it's a lazy hook or whether it's a high stick, you're just being casual with your, you know, with the way you're holding your stick. And you know, we saw that with the Brendan Lemieux one. The Scheifele one, I don't disagree. I thought it was a little bit on the marginal edge. You know, the fact is that, you know, they scored 3 power play goals against you. That's going to kill you every game. So clearly that's not something you should be doing. You know, it's just something that, those types of penalties specifically are something you have to eliminate from the game.
Right, and some games it's going to hurt you really bad like it did yesterday, and then there's going to be other games where it doesn't hurt you, like against Nashville. Overall, though, the penalties are a problem. And we talked about this last month.
No,
I mean, this has been a problem all year long. It wasn't a problem last year, so the Jets have to clean it up.
It was a problem 2 years ago, though, of course. You remember, you know, where they often had a parade to the penalty box. So it is, you know, I don't think, to your point, Ezzy, I think I agree with you. You know, if Paul Maurice, if the Jets take penalties because of physical play, or you know, when they're a little too, you know, maybe with the body checking, I don't think Paul Maurice is that upset about that. But it's when it's the lazy stick fouls, or, you know, Brendan Lemieux gets his stick up there, that's when I think Paul Maurice is going to have a problem. And sometimes you're going to be able to kill him off, and then other times you're going to give up 3 power play goals. Because the Jets 5-on-5, I mean, they, you know, they tied the Florida Panthers yesterday 5-on-5, you know, 1-1. It was the 3 power play goals against that really hurt the Jets. You heard Paul Maurice say Brendan Lemieux's, you know, penalties were a turning point in the game. You heard Dave Poulin talking about it earlier. It's going to be a problem that the Jets will need to clean up as they return to the ice next Friday, of course, against the Colorado Avalanche. When we come back, Colin Stevenson covers the New York Rangers for Newsday. We're going to be joined by Colin and much more on the Jets coming up in hour number 2 as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number 2 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Newsday newspaper in New York, we're pleased to welcome to the program Colin Stevenson. Colin covers the New York Rangers. Good morning, Colin. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning. What's going on out there? How's the weather out there in Winnipeg?
Not too bad. Sort of normal for this time of year. A little gray. You know, we had a little bit of snow on the ground yesterday, but a lot of it has gone away now. So sort of standard early November weather here in Winnipeg.
I got you. I just got back from California, you know, so they got nice weather up there.
Probably less snow in California than we had here.
A little bit less.
Yeah.
A little bit less.
Colin, obviously, you cover the Rangers. We brought you on to talk about the Rangers sort of early on in this 2018-19 season. Everyone expected that this was going to be a rebuilding year for the Rangers. We remember the letter that the Rangers released to the season ticket holders at the end of last year. 5-7-1 so far this season. From your perspective, you know, how would you assess the Rangers' start to the season?
I think it's been as expected. I think, listen, rebuilding is never easy. It's never easy to look at. You know, it's like I was thinking about this. It's like when you've got this highway that everybody uses and, you know, it needs to be fixed and you got to shut lanes down and, you know, it goes on for years and stuff and it's just ugly. So I think 5-7-1, they'll take it. Absolutely. I know they think that they're going to battle for a playoff spot. I don't think most of the rest of us do. It's just on a nightly basis. You want to see them be competitive and play well and play hard. And you want to see the young guys, especially, you know, that they're counting on to be their future. You want to see those guys play well. So I think up to this point, I think, you know, they're coming along as expected. I've been impressed with some of the mannerisms and some of the things that David Quinn has done as the coach. You know, he's a guy who isn't shy to stop practice and yell at them and tell them what they're doing wrong or what they should be doing better. And, you know, he holds people accountable. And, you know, I think so far so good, actually.
Colin, we have to ask you about Brett Howden. He's from Oak Bank, Manitoba, which is really close to us here in Winnipeg. He's off to a really good start to the season, 3 goals and 8 points. He was obviously a first-round pick of the Tampa Bay Lightning. He comes over from Tampa Bay, and how pleasant of a surprise has he been for David Quinn?
Oh, you know what? He has been the best surprise of all. I mean, absolutely. Just a kid that, you know, we asked Quinn about him. You know, after the last game, he scored and had an assist. And we said, you know, asked him that very question. And he said, listen, I didn't know anything about Brett Howden until I got the job. You know, and this is a guy who had, in Quinn, you know, he'd been coaching at Boston University. And so he knew a lot of the young players because he had recruited them along the way, or at least he knew the talent pool. He didn't know anything about Brett Howden. And, you know, he noticed him in the Rangers at a prospect camp, and they did a little prospect tournament in Traverse City, Michigan. And I guess Howden was, I didn't go to that, but I guess Howden was the best player there for them. And, you know, quite frankly, we did not expect him to make the team. You know, he sort of forced his way onto the team. You know, we had thought that they were going to keep Elias Anderson, who was their first round pick last year. And, you know, had finished up the year with them at the end of last season and who scored 2 goals in the first preseason game. We thought, okay, well, that's, you know, that does it. You know, he'll make the team. And then I think all of us were shocked when Anderson didn't make the team and Howden did. And the reality was that Howden had a really strong training camp and a strong preseason. He didn't have the sexy 2 goals in the first game like Anderson did, but he just was steady the whole time and they kept him and he started out as a fourth line center and he played well enough that he rose, you know, keeps elevating himself up the lineup. Now he's the third line center. He's playing ahead of Philip Hedel, which is, you know, who was their other first round pick last year, who, you know, everybody knows is super talented and, you know, they had real high expectations for him. So he's stepped over him in the pecking order. Now he's the third line center. Hedel's the fourth. He's getting power play time. He's on that second power play unit. So he's been a find for them. He's absolutely been probably the best story that they've got going so far this year.
You know, Colin, while the Rangers may have 7 regulation losses, I read today in your Newsday column, they're 4-0-1 in overtime and 3-0 in shootouts. So clearly, when this team gets to extra time, they take it to that next level. What is it about that extra time? Is it the one less player that is allowing them to have success then?
Well, I mean, I think some of that is probably true. I mean, I think, you know, they've gotten good goalkeeping this season. I mean, outside of maybe 1 or 2 games, I think Henrik Lundqvist has been really, really good. And so that certainly helps. I mean, the last shootout, you know, as you know, we talked to Kevin Shattenkirk who scored two shootout winners. You know, he's 2 for 2. He shoots third, so you have a defenseman going third. And he said, you know, one of the things he said is, listen, when you, you know, with Lundqvist, we know he's going to stop two out of the first three at least. And so it makes a difference when I'm coming up third and I'm shooting to win as opposed to having to score to keep it going, you know. So I think, you know, you got to, you know, look, Lundqvist has been the face of the Rangers for over a decade now. And, you know, he's 36 now. He's going to be 37 before the season's over. Everybody was, you know, everybody was kind of like, yeah, we're not sure if he's bought into this rebuild and, you know, he's not going to be around by the time they're good again. And, you know, how does that work for him? And he's never won a cup and all that. But he's bought in, you know, and he's playing and he's playing well. And he's giving them a chance every night. Now, I don't think he had a particularly good game in Los Angeles. I mean, he gave up a goal that, frankly, I would have preferred that he stop and, you know, in 55 seconds to go or something like that. You know, a shot from way out that, you know, yes, he was screened, but, you know, I feel like he should have had enough time to react to it. But other than, you know, as I said, one or two performances here and there where he's kind of so-so or kind of not tremendous, he's been everything that they've needed. And I think he gives them a chance in the overtime. And, you know, and they play defensively. They, you know, they've tightened up their game at the back as well. So even though you only have three guys on the ice, I think, you know, they're thinking defense first, and I think that makes a big difference for them. Now, shootouts, you know, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of shootouts as a way of determining the winner of a game.
I'm with you on that one, Colin.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, but, you know, they're doing what they need to do at the shooter end, and again, you know, when you have a goalie that's stopping two out of three, that gives you a chance.
Colin Stephenson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Colin covers the New York Rangers for Newsday newspaper. Colin, when you're a young team that's going through a rebuild, you know, people look at pending unrestricted free agents on your roster and say those guys are likely to be on their way out either at the trade deadline or earlier. Two big names for the Rangers are pending UFAs. Kevin Hayes and Matt Zuccarello is who I'm specifically speaking about. Here in Winnipeg, there's been some prognosticators that are potentially linking Kevin Hayes with the Winnipeg Jets. He's still young. He's only 26 years of age. What is the best aspect of Kevin Hayes' game, you know, for people here in Winnipeg who may not have seen him before?
Well, he's a big guy, you know, who possesses the puck and he slows it down. You know, he uses his size to his advantage. He keeps the puck away from defensemen and, you know, he's got good vision of the ice. So, you know, he doesn't shoot enough, quite frankly. I think a lot of the Rangers don't shoot enough. I mean, Zuccarello doesn't either. Those guys need to shoot more. And that's one of the things that David Quinn is working on them about. Like, you know, listen, you need to shoot. You're not going to score if you don't shoot, et cetera. You got to go to the dirty areas. You got to go in front of them. You got to stop in front of them instead of going behind the net. These are things that he harps on them. And shoot more. And, you know, so that is the one thing that maybe, you know, Hayes will use his size. He possesses the puck. You know, he likes to dish it off, and he needs to shoot more. But he's a big, strong guy who, you know, who can, you know, fill a need for a team, you know, not a number one center certainly, but can be, you know, in your top six or your top nine and play a solid role. And that's for the Rangers as to whether or not, you know, they move him. It depends on whether or not they – you know, they want to keep them going forward. I mean, they have some kids in the system that they're counting on coming up, and we'll see what other moves they make at the trade deadline or before to acquire talent. But that's their focus is they're not going to be good. They think this is going to last a while. Okay, I mean they're pretty set on that. They're not going to go try and get some quick fixes or anything like that. So if this lasts 2 or 3 years. I mean, Hayes is 26. You know, you want him around at 28 or 29, you know, and so that's the thing for them. That's why they signed him to a 1-year deal this summer when he was a free agent. And I would put even money on the fact that he's probably going to be one of the guys out. Zuccarello, I would think, you know, absolutely he's going to be one of the guys moving on because they have guys down that are playing in the minor leagues that, you know, they're going to want to give a look to at some point.
Colin, Kevin Shattenkirk is still looking for his first goal of the year. And obviously, you know, he's under contract for a couple more years. He's making, you know, around $6.5 million a year. How concerned are you with Shattenkirk's lack of offensive production?
No, I'm not. I'm not, actually, because, you know, from a team standpoint, you know, a lot of what he hasn't provided has been made up for, you know, in other places. Shattenkirk, believe it or not, is now not the point man on the first power play unit. Neil Pionk has sort of supplanted him as far as that's concerned. So Shattenkirk is the number two point man. But yeah, as I mentioned, you know, he does have two shootout winners. So I mean, like he has hit the back of the net a couple times in big spots this year. I'm not terribly surprised. I mean, he's playing on a third pair defensively, and you know he's getting his power play time. And you know it's a long season. I'm not terribly worried about it. He did. He sat out a game early this season. He got scratched. I guess he just wasn't playing well. And this was David Quinn. Yeah, and David Quinn and Shattenkirk, as you may know, go back a long way. I mean, they Shattenkirk played Quinn recruited Shattenkirk to Boston University, and he coached him at Boston University when he was an assistant there. And then he coached him in the minor leagues when he was in the Colorado Avalanche system. So they go back a long way. They have a really good relationship. And, you know, I don't know, four or five games in, Quinn scratched Shattenkirk. And it wasn't the first time he's done it, actually. He wasn't playing well. And, you know, Quinn thought, and I don't know whether he thought this or he just told us this, but he thought that, you know, Shattenkirk maybe had a mental block where he still wasn't playing as well as he could because he was thinking about his knee, which had been surgically repaired last year. And Shattenkirk's played much better since he sat out the lineup. He's got points. He's handling his ice time. I'm not concerned about him at all. And again, the things that you want from Shattenkirk, maybe you're not getting all of it, but you're getting it from other places. Neil Pionk has been super for them. As far as generating offense and doing those things that Shattenkirk was supposed to do.
You know, Colin, when you're rebuilding, it's always good to have a nice veteran presence. How important has Mark Stahl been for the Rangers?
Oh, Mark Stahl's been great. You know, the young defenseman at the end of last year, we're calling him, you know, Uncle Mark or something like that. I mean, he's really taking guys under his wing, and especially Pionk. He's played with Pionk. He played with Pionk at the end of last season. And he's played with Pionk most of the time here at the beginning of this season. And he's, you know, on the, you know, listen, Mark will bristle up a little bit if you think, you know, if you try and suggest that he's, you know, just some sort of teacher and old guy. You know, he's not old. You know, he insists he's 31 and he feels great. And he's playing great. I mean, he had a real good game in the last game of the road trip. And you know, he's just steady back there. He doesn't make too many mistakes. I don't, you know, you notice him for just being in the right place at the right time most of the time. And, you know, I know people don't love that plus-minus statistic anymore. They don't think it's really all that honest sometimes, and you can get misled by it. But, you know, his plus-minus is, you know, he's got a relatively low minus on a team that's a losing team. And I just think he's been steady and a solid influence. As you know, the Rangers don't have a captain this season. They've gone with five alternate captains, and Stahl is the one who wears the letter, you know, home and away games, and the other four guys alternate between home and away. So you know, he's a very important force in that locker room for them.
Colin Stephenson covers the New York Rangers for Newsday newspaper. Colin, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us and providing some insight.
Well, you know, thanks for having me. It's always fun to talk about hockey.
We'll do it again real soon, Colin. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
When we come back, we preview the rest of the month of November for the Winnipeg Jets. They're on their way home from Finland. They start next Friday against the Avs. We talk about the month of November for the Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Connor Hellebuyck picks up a career-high 27th win as the Winnipeg
Winnipeg Jets a 3-0 win over the Colorado Avalanche.
From last February, our buddy Dennis Bayak with the call of Connor Hellebuck's shutout victory against the Colorado Avalanche. The Avs in town next Friday. It's the first game back for the Jets from the road trip to Helsinki. The Jets will play 4 in a row at home and then 10 games over the rest of the month. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Wonder if Frank's got something cooking today.
Hopefully, if he's listening, as he usually does, maybe he'll send us a picture, see what he's got on the grill for this evening, because you're looking for something to do. You're getting a little
like,
hungry.
Yeah, like, you know, I could go for a roast or a brisket.
Yeah, things like that.
Some ribs.
Oh, those are all very good.
Pizza, pasta.
You basically have named all the food groups.
I had a brisket in Minneapolis. It was very good.
Really?
Yes.
Well,
name drop.
No, you were at the
hashtag no big deal.
You missed the show last week, an unexcused absence, if I recall correctly. You were
Let's go back to the 2017-18 season. See how many shows I missed versus you two. I don't even think it's comparable.
I'm not sure we need to do any advanced stats or anything like that.
We were on air last weekend, and you were sitting in Minneapolis. I imagine just surrounded by beautiful women, champagne,
ensconced in velvet,
and enjoying some brisket.
Yeah. Basically, it sums up my day.
Were you at the game also, the Saints-Vikings game?
I did attend the game, yes.
Okay.
Why do you think he was there?
Well, I've been to Minneapolis before. Well, I think you went to the football game. You didn't go to the concert, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I'm not a concert guy.
Not a concert guy. We all went to the Vikings game. Who was that? Vikings, you were there too, Ezzy.
I think Detroit.
Yeah, maybe. With Richie, we went to go see The Boss.
Yeah, and then we all went to the Springsteen concert that night, and Dave went to
the mall. I went to the Mall of America.
By himself.
That's okay.
One Gary Lawless was also at that concert.
Ah, there you go. A blast from the
name
past.
Drop.
Name drop. The Jets have 10 games left in the month of November after they return home and get back started on Friday.
Can we agree that this has been one of the weirdest schedules in recent memory? And we've seen some weird schedules with the Jets. We were talking about it off air with producer Chris Curry. I mean, last year, November was, let's be honest, the month from hell.
I don't remember.
All the games they had.
Yeah, I remember they had a lot of games. I don't remember it being from the month from hell.
Dramatic. Well, I don't. They did well.
Yeah,
I mean, from the perspective of the amount of games they had, and remember Paul Maurice talked about it a lot. They didn't have a lot of practice.
They had like 14 or 15 games last November, if I recall correctly. Was it the season is a little bizarre? Not bizarre, but you have these dates that you circle on your calendar where they go overseas. So everything in the first 5 weeks of the season or 4 weeks of the season is leading up to the trip. It's like before Finland and then after Finland. And now that they're on their way back, you can sort of get into the flow of it where it's going to be, starting Friday, sort of every second day they'll play, which is sort of what you're used to as a fan is, every second day, maybe they get a third day off or they play back to back. Only one back-to-back in the rest of the month of November. That comes on Black Friday. They play an afternoon game in Minneapolis, which seems to be becoming a bit of a tradition now, where they play that Friday afternoon game in Minneapolis, and then Saturday they play in St. Louis. So you have...
Can the NHL stop scheduling games when I'm at work?
Well, they obviously didn't consult with you. I'm a little surprised.
Well, it's not just me.
I know. I'm a little surprised they didn't schedule one of the two games in Finland for Saturday afternoon.
Yeah,
like why are both games during the week?
I didn't actually understand. Well, no, I don't even. It's not even that. It's a function of like, why would you need to have those games back? I don't know traditionally what they've done with their global series, but I mean, to me, it just doesn't make sense to just sandwich them like that, unless there's a rationale. But especially considering the Jets weren't playing till Friday,
sandwich.
You threw Dave completely off. But gone.
Yeah, no, but well, I might go get a sandwich. But the point is that. You play them on the Saturday, so then instead of coming home Saturday, they come home on Sunday, and then they play the Colorado Avalanche on Friday. So, or they just move that game back. It just doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I found the schedule.
And from Ezzy's perspective, he's right. A lot of people were at work. Now, a lot of people were playing hooky, or watching it on their phones or watching it on their computers.
Do people still use the word hooky?
I think so.
I think it's appropriate in a hockey context.
Well, sure. It's appropriate at all. When you're away from work, when you're AWOL, like Dave was from the show last week, you're playing hooky. It's still a viable reference.
I was actually running amok last week, so.
Well, there you go. Running amok, playing hooky. Those are all
good.
Should
we change the name of the show to the Illegal Curve Hooky Show?
That would just be odd. Would that mean we're on air or not on air?
We'd
I mean,
be off
if
air.
We're playing hooky, then you're not on. And so would people know to tune in or would they know not to? I mean, I don't even know where we'd go with that necessarily. But let's get to this, the rest of the schedule for this month. You have four divisional games. You have the Avs next Friday. You have the two back-to-back in Minnesota and St. Louis. And then you got the Blackhawks towards the end of the month. You got these, you know, next four in a row at home. You got some games against the Pacific Division. You know, it's not the world's most difficult schedule, but it's not...
Not at all.
You have a schedule where the Jets need to begin to play with some sort of consistency and some quality to their game. I think that's what people are upset about, is there hasn't been an overwhelming amount of quality to their games so far this season.
Right. I think all four of these games coming up are winnable, and that's no disrespect to any of these teams, but you mentioned it. You know, you have no back-to-backs until the end of the month. You know, that's November 23rd and 24th. You mentioned the game against Minnesota, the afternoon game. And the first 2 months of the season, you only have the two back-to-back games.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of teams that have three or four back-to-back games in the first couple of months. So you look at the game against Colorado. I mean, you want to start, obviously, the home standoff with a big win there against a team that you're tied with. And then the New Jersey Devils, you know, they're around 500 right now. They've been struggling a little bit. And then you've got Washington, you know, the following Wednesday. That's going to be a tough game. Washington just lost to Montreal. And, you know, Buffalo's obviously having a better season. You've got them to end the homestand. But of these four games, I mean, you have to think that the Jets are going to get points in probably three of the four games, I would think. And it's not a guarantee because nothing is a guarantee and all games are important. And, you know, these teams are fighting for points as well. When you're talking about the Devils and the Sabres, they're obviously, you know, competing for a wild card spot, most likely at the end of the year, as opposed to Washington, who's going to be competing for the President's Trophy, right? They're still a top team in my opinion. So, you know, it's an important homestand, but it's not the most difficult homestand. You're talking probably about two playoff teams here, I think, by the end of the year. Obviously, the Devils, you know, hope that they can get back in, but it's going to be tough. And then, you know, that road trip after is not going to be easy, guys. You're
Especially
talking about
the way Vancouver's been playing.
Well, four games in 6 nights or 6 days because it's an afternoon game against Minnesota. But, you know, you're playing four teams that could all be in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you could have, you know, a couple of these teams miss. But right now, you know, the Blues are the team that's struggling the most. But right now, you know, Vancouver and Calgary are playing really good hockey, and so is Minnesota. So, you know, I think you have to want to win three of these four games coming up because you've lost three of your last five. You lost two to Toronto. Mm-hmm. You lost one game to Florida. So, you know, I don't think the Jets are going to be happy with a 500 homestand here.
Well, they were so dominant, and they have been so dominant on home ice, you know, rarely losing in regulation time that, you know, history, if it's any indicator, has shown that the Jets are going to be successful at home. That's where they made so much of their hay last season, is coming out to
the Well, that's what I'm saying.
Effort.
I mean, I could see them, you know, winning all four of these games. I'm not predicting that they're going to win all four of these games. I mean, I mean, Colorado's a really good team. I don't think enough people are talking about Colorado this year. I mean,
we'll
I think
more about them on Wednesday's show for sure.
Right. And I think that, you know, when you're talking about the Colorado Avalanche, it's not just the top line. I mean, the top line, they're scoring 50% of their goals.
MacKinnon, Rantanen, and Landeskog are, you know, truly, and we'll, like I said, we'll talk about this on Wednesday's show. Right now, they're right in the top of the argument for best line in the NHL.
Right. And you've got other good players there. Alex Kerfoot scored a beautiful goal the other night. So they've got other good players aside from that top line. So that's going to be a tough one. And none of these games are going to be easy. When you're talking about the Devils or the Sabres, these aren't bad teams anymore.
Well, the Sabres are playing way better hockey than they have for the last number of years with the infusion of the talent that they
have.
There
are a few bad teams in the NHL. I mean, you could look at, you know, the Detroit Red Wings, but the Red Wings have won their last three games, haven't they?
Yeah,
after
the Jets beat them,
the Red Wings won. I mean, the LA Kings right now are a bad team. The Red Wings are have been playing better, but they, you know, certainly won't be a playoff team come season's end. It's been a bit of a topsy turvy start to the season. We'll talk about them later on. But how about the Montreal Canadiens? This is a team that everyone thought was in a little bit of disarray after another offseason of some questionable moves. And look at the Montreal Canadiens, what they're doing. Towards the top of the Eastern Conference, 7-3-2, and we'll spend a whole segment in the third hour talking about the Canadiens. But the Sabres, they're playing good hockey. I mean, the Devils, you know, they've only played 10 games, so they played, I think, the fewest number of games in the NHL, but they're still 5-4-1. So none of the games, like you said, Ezzie, on this upcoming homestand are going to be easy ones. One thing the Jets do have going for them, when the Capitals visit on that Wednesday, it is a second half of a back-to-back for the Capitals as they play, I believe, Tuesday night in Minnesota, travel to Winnipeg to face the Jets on the Wednesday. So the Jets will be sitting waiting for the Capitals after they play in a back-to-back situation, Dave.
Well, and that's one benefit the Jets often get is the teams go through Minnesota. Now, it's not always in a back-to-back situation, but the fact is that Minnesota usually faces their top goalie, and you know, because the team's looking to get their road trips maybe off to a good start, so they give Minnesota the top goalie and, you know, hoping to get that 2 points, and then Winnipeg maybe get the benefit of playing their backup. Not always, especially now as Winnipeg's become a better team.
Yeah.
That happens maybe a little bit less, but the fact of the matter is that it's always an advantage to play a team, obviously, at the end of a back-to-back. So you know, from Winnipeg's perspective, it's definitely a schedule that you're liking. Mm-hmm. You can't complain about the schedule. Oftentimes, by default, that seemed to be our go-to. It'd be like listening to, you know, oh, the schedule's that. Well, you can't complain about the schedule because, again, I'm not suggesting that the Finland trip is easy. They're going to have some time to acclimatize back to North America. But then really you get into it and you're just like, okay, this is very manageable.
When we come back, Sean Tierney is going to join us. He works for The Athletic as well as Hockey Graphs, does some great work on the analytics side of the game. Sean will join us to talk more about the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.